Hello, Sentinel Warriors. I'm Chief Mass Sergeant Rudy Gomez, the Command Chief for 20th Air Force. Today, we're also joined by our esteemed 20th Air Force historian, Dr. Jeremy Pritchard. And on today's episode, we are reflecting on our history as we celebrate 80 years of 20th Air Force, a history of incredible airmen and accomplishments dating back to 1944. To help us do that, we have a pleasure to sit down with former Alabama Senator Hank Irwin, son of World War II Medal of Honor recipient Master Sergeant Henry Red Irwin. He is here to share his unique perspective on courage, legacy, honor, and inspiring others through his eyes as a son of a Medal of Honor recipient and duty-driven man. Senator, welcome, sir.
Well, Chief, it's a pleasure to be here at Warren Air Force Base in this beautiful state of Wyoming. Glad to meet you. Glad to meet Dr. Pritchard. And this is an honor to come to Warren Air Force Base and to help christen the new Irwin Building. And so I am delighted and full of gratitude for all of your kindness and invite our family to come.
Well, we're honored to have you, sir, and to memorialize this in a digital format. I'll lead off with our first question, sir. Growing up as the son of a Medal of Honor recipient, like Sergeant Red Irwin, what are some early memories or family stories that shaped your understanding of his character and legacy?
Good question. My dad was, to me, a role model of what honor is all about. That was probably the key concept that was in all of our family, all of my growing up days, and that is honor. Be a man of honor. When you give your word, you keep your word. When you get an assignment, you do it to the best of your ability. He came out of the Air Force with the values and legacy of service that extended well into our family, all of my growing up years, to the point where it was so special to watch a man model all of the values he had learned in the military and bring them home to the family. And it was not that he structured everything like a command, you will do this, you will do this. He role modeled it. He was a man of honor. He never had a debt. We never had a debt when we were growing up. He came through the Great Depression, and he learned that every penny has value. So he never had a debt, and he always paid things on time, and he was always where he's supposed to be on time. So the key thing he always said is that your name is everything, and so treasure the name and build on it with honor. Growing up, that was just a code that we lived in our family. And I'm glad to say to you that I lived with him for 52 years before he passed away. And in 52 years, I never saw him do anything to violate that code. He was always a man of honor, gracious with everybody he was around. He loved to tell good stories. He loved to have a laugh. He loved baseball. He loved football. He was always involved with church. He was the kind of man that you could say, boy, now he is somebody that can be a role model. And I'm just so honored to have been his son and trying to pass on to my grandchildren the same values that he invested in me, honor, duty, and service.
Thank you, Senator.
That's fantastic. Thank you again, Senator, for joining us here on this special anniversary for 20th Air Force. How did your father describe his actions after the war?
Interesting you said that. One of the things that Dad would do, he never really talked about it that much. If you asked him about it, he would. But he was like every other veteran that I learned, especially Medal of Honor recipients, because I met a lot of them through the Medal of Honor Society that Dad was a member of. Most of the, as you might call it, heroes don't really talk about their action that much. They don't really want to be put on a pedestal. They see themselves as just everyday Americans that love this country and are willing to put their lives on the line for the sake of their country, but more importantly, for the love of their teammates. Dad would, if you talked to him about his mission, he would always talk about the other people that were on the plane. He would always try to push things to them. One time when I was a young man, back about 30, 40 years ago, they flew a B-29 into Birmingham on a national tour. It's the Fifi, now in Texas, that's where they hangar it. But Fifi was in the early stages of renovation. And so they flew it into Birmingham on a cross-country promotional tour. And they hangared it there at the Birmingham International Airport. And I saw where it was there, and I called Dad and I said, Dad, a B-29 has just flown through Birmingham. Would you like me to take you over to see it? And he said, I'd like to go. And so I took him over there, and it was the first time he had crawled up the steps to go into a B-29 in about 40 years. First time since his action that he'd been on a B-29. And I said, walk me through it. Tell me what happened. And he began to walk me through every point of, from the moment he pulled the pin to show me the chute. It was supposed to go down and it malfunctioned. The first response flew back up into his face and blistered his face, obliterated his ear, obliterated his nose, got phosphorus all in his eyes. And he told me how he was faced with the most impossible situation you could ever dream of, the worst case scenario. And he told me the only thing I could think of at that moment, I said, a prayer. He said, oh God, I need your help now. And then he started sweeping the floor trying to find the bomb. He had phosphorus all in his eyes. He couldn't see. The phosphorus was burning his eyes out. And so he was sweeping the floor trying to find the bomb. And he found it, and he just swept it up into his arms. He was the only one that was not strapped down. So if he didn't do anything, everybody dies. Everybody dies. And he's got just seconds to make a decision. And he didn't even hesitate. He swept it up into his bare hands, clutched it to his chest, and tried to carry it like a football around the gun turret that was in the middle of the B-29 forward compartment, big 50 caliber top and lower guns. And in the middle was the big 55-gallon type drum of ammunition. So he had to squeeze his way around that. And when he got on the other side of the big drum of ammunition, the navigator's table was locked in his path. He said, I knew if I put that bomb down, I'd never pick it up again. So he tucked it under his arm like a football and used his left hand to find the spring latch to flip it open, pull the bomb out, stumbles into the front compartment screaming. He opened the window, and the co-pilot, Roy Stables, opened the window, and he lunged over him, threw the bomb out. But by this time, he's a torch. He's just a burning torch himself. He falls back down into the front of the plane, and they use blankets and fire extinguishers to put out the fire and covered him up. But he was burned so bad, they knew if they didn't get him to first aid immediately, he was going to die. I was telling General Hoosier that on that day of all days, and I look at the providence of God in a situation like that, that of all days, the squadron commander decided to ride along as an observer on the mission. Dad's plane was the lead plane in the mission, 85 B-29s going to Japan for a bombing mission. And the squadron commander, Colonel Strauss, decided he wanted to ride along. And interestingly, he positioned himself in the jump seat right in back of Tony Summerall, the pilot, on the left side of the plane. So when Dad brought the bomb through the front compartment, the engineer sat on this side, facing that way, and then Colonel Strauss was sitting here, and then Tony Summerall, the pilot, was sitting right in front of him. Dad went right by him with the bomb, threw it out, and then collapsed at his feet. Now, here's why that was so significant. General LeMay had a doctrine that he instituted in his command with the 20th Air Force that if you didn't go over the target in your mission, you were going to be court-martialed. It was a hard doctrine. If you're ordered to fly a mission, you go over the target or you're court-martialed. The pilot was in a delicate situation. They're the lead plane. They knew the court-martial doctrine. Dad said to them, go ahead, go on without me. Go on with the mission. In spite of all of his burns, he was still conscious. And he told Captain Summerall, go ahead and go on with the mission without me. Go on, do it. And Colonel Strauss made a career-ending decision at that moment. He immediately yelled out, get two move up, emergency EWO vac to emergency evac to EWO, and pulled out of formation and flew Dad back to Iwo Jima and got him into first aid and saved his life by that decision, knowing that it might be the one that ended his career. And so I look at key people in the right places at the right time. He had the command power to do that, to make the decision and live with the consequences, and he made the decision to save this airman's life. And I'm so grateful that he was there on that day. So they flew Dad back, and he went through first aid, and then they moved him to Guam Fleet Hospital, tried to save his life. He was fading fast, and that's why they went to an immediate request for the Medal of Honor.
Extraordinary. Thank you.
A very powerful story. Mm-hmm. Senator, from your perspective, what personal qualities or values do you believe contributed to your father's remarkable courage and actions during his military service?
I think, Chief, one of the things that really stands out was that he was always responsible. He took a personal responsibility for anything he was asked to do. And then he went beyond the call of duty to fulfill it beyond what was expected. And that really goes back to his childhood. He was the oldest son in a family that had six brothers and he had one sister. He was the oldest. And sadly, his dad, my grandfather, died when he was 10 years old. And this was in the early days of the Depression. And so Dad, at 10 years old, stepped up to become the man of the house at 10 years old. And he went ahead and tried everything to do to go to work to provide for his brothers and sisters. So he took responsibility for every situation that he was in. A personal responsibility to do my best to take care of my family and wherever he was assigned. He took care of my grandmother, his mother. He dropped out of high school because he said my family needs a place to live, so he went to work and he bought his first house at the age of 19 and put his family in that house and took care of them. And when he enlisted in 1943 into the Army Air Corps, he wanted to be the best airman that could be possible in his unit. So he always was striving for excellence. But it came back from this idea, I have a personal responsibility. And it was almost as if it was almost like a conviction that went right down into his soul that wherever I am, if I'm involved in something, I will give it my best and be responsible with all of my being to make sure that the outcome is excellence. If I could say anything that he had, he was the most responsible person I've ever seen in my life. And everything he did with excellence.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator, you mentioned your father's experience boarding a B-29 years after his heroic actions and his military service had ended. Did your father reflect on his other wartime experiences and contributions?
He would always talk about his crew. He loved his crew. He loved everybody that was in his crew. And he would talk about them and the things that they did and the missions they went on. His all-time story that he would tell about the crew and the mission was the Tokyo bomb raids in February, I think, of 45. He would talk about those. They went in as an observer, and they, in his plane, they were hearing some of the command staff to monitor what was going on down below. And he said, we stayed up above Tokyo for a couple of hours watching what was going on. He would always talk about that raid above all because he said this was something we were watching. We were watching our comrades coming in at 5,000 feet over Tokyo rather than the 19,000 where they were and seeing the tremendous pressure of the burning bombs. They used incendiaries to set off a torch in Tokyo, and the heat was so bad, he said, we were watching our planes flip over and crash because they would hit these thermals, and they became like leaves in a forest on a fall day. The wind would hit them, and they would just go up and over. And he said, with a tear in his eyes, he'd always say, we lost 10 good crews that night, and we watched them go down. And he said, I'll never forget that as long as I live. So then he would always add with that, and he would say, son, I want you to remember, freedom is not free. And I saw it with my own eyes, and I'll never forget it.
Senator, What valuable lessons about leadership, resiliency, or honor have you learned in hearing about your father's experiences and from interacting with veterans and their families through your life?
It's interesting. The things that Dad taught me about loving your family, loving your country, and loving your veterans, because the veterans are the ones who have paid the price for your freedom. Always love a veteran. And I've treasured that all of my life, to try to do whatever I can do to honor the veterans. He would always instill in me that, you know, here he has been badly burned in his action. He had to go through 44 plastic surgeries. He had to spend 2.5 years in a military hospitals to recover. And he finally was discharged in, I think, 1947. But I never saw him complain or bellyache about his circumstances, about what was done to him, what happened to him on this mission. He always had the idea of, okay, make the best of what you've got. And so that translated to me that whatever comes at you in life, take responsibility for it. Don't bellyache about it. Adapt to it. Make the best of what you can and try to bring it to excellence. And if you can do that, then you're a man. And so when I went into politics, that was the same thing. I wanted to take care of my veterans. I wanted to take care of the families of Alabama. And I really wanted to do whatever I could to take care of the United States of America, because we all love this country. And the 20th Air Force is a grand example of the tremendous patriotism and the gung-ho spirit of what it's going to take to do that. So I just applaud the 20th Air Force, and I'm always a big fan.
Senator, how have you carried forward and honored your father's legacy of bravery and sacrifice in your own life and endeavors? And follow on, are there specific initiatives or causes that hold special significance to you in preserving his memory?
Good question. When I got elected and was able to serve in the Senate, I would always try to, we created the Medal of Honor Day in the state of Alabama, that every 25th of March is Medal of Honor Day. It's now a national holiday, but we wanted to honor the Medal of Honor recipients from our state and make sure that they're recognized. Secondly, one of the things I really took great joy in is anytime I could honor a veteran with a citation, a proclamation, to let people know in their communities that you have somebody special in your community. I wanted to make sure that would happen. We had a young soldier injured in Iraq who was from my district, and I wanted to make sure that he was recognized for he survived and came home injured, recovered. But I wanted to let him know that we cared. And so we created a special honor for him and honored him in the Alabama legislature during my time. And we wanted to make sure he understood that he's special. Every man and every woman that serves in the United States military is special. They should always be saluted. They should always be thanked. Matter of fact, with my own grandkids, when I'm ever around a veteran, I will say, now, this is the proper way you greet a veteran. You extend your hand and you say, thank you for your service. And then you stand up straight and you salute them. That's what they're due. That's what they're owed. And that makes it special. Always love your veterans. And so Dad passed that down to me. So when I would see a veteran, I'd shake their hand and salute them. So now we're passing it down to my grandkids, because veterans are special.
Senator, in what ways do you believe sharing your father's story and the stories of other Medal of Honor recipients can educate and inspire younger generations about patriotism, service, and sacrifice?
Good question, Chief. We have a great crop of young airmen that are coming in. They're seeking their career, and they're seeking their purpose, their meaning in life, and their future. And the stories of the Medal of Honor recipients teach all men and women who serve in the military that if you are an honorable person, serving with distinction and honor, the best of your ability, that is a tremendous opportunity. But then at the same time, you must be ready, because there could possibly come during their time in service where there will be an extraordinary moment where all that you have been prepared for and all that you've trained for and all that you believe will come to that defining moment where you are called upon to do something extraordinary to save the life of your comrades. You don't know what it is, and you don't know where it is, and you don't know if it will ever come, but you're prepared so that if that moment comes, by your training, you'll know exactly what to do. You know, Dad always said, even in his action and episode, you asked him, how did you do that? He said, and he would always say it, he said, it was my training. He said, the training, that you don't panic, you go through the training, and you react. And he would always look back to the training. So the lessons of reading Medal of Honor stories and citations give you the preparation to think in terms of always be prepared, always be ready, and if the moment comes, ask the Lord to give you the strength to do what's the right thing to be done at that moment. You may never know what it is. If you talk to any Medal of Honor recipient, you ask them, how did you come up with doing that? And they will always say, everyone I have ever talked to will always say, that's the only thing I could think of. They will always say that. That was the only thing I could think of to do at that moment. And so that's why your training in the easy days prepares you that if there ever is a crisis that does come, then you'll be able to respond and do something extraordinary. So my encouragement to all young airmen and commissioned officers, non-commissioned officers, is that preparation prepares you for what may and hopefully will never come, but may come a defining moment when you have to do something extraordinary in that situation, and your training will get you there.
Our Major Command's motto is always ready, certainly resonated in 1944, and so it does here 80 years later in 2024. Thank you for that message. I'm going to go into closing comments, but I'm not sure if you would want to make any other comments.
It has been an honor to be at Warren Air Force Base and to see that the 20th Air Force is still pushing on 80th anniversary this year. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud that the mission is continuing to defend and protect the United States of America, and that makes me mighty proud. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. On behalf of our listeners, I want to extend a heartfelt gratitude to retired Senator Hank Erwin for joining us today and sharing his poignant insights into his father's extraordinary journey during World War II. Your father's bravery, sacrifice continues to inspire us all. Thank you for honoring us with your presence and the invaluable lessons you've impacted us. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Until next time, stay curious, stay compassionate, stay engaged.